Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings, host of The Big Story, Canada's longest-running daily news podcast. For 6 years now, we've been telling one story a day, every one of them about something that matters to Canadians. This spring, though, we're going deeper. The Big Story presents Pay Dirt, the inside story of Ontario's Greenbelt scandal. From political games to stag and doe parties, endangered species, RCMP investigations, and Las Vegas massages, you will hear the full story straight from the people who broke it. The Big Story presents Pay Dirt. New episodes every Monday starting April 22nd, and you can get them all by following The Big Story wherever you get your podcasts.
Find your frequency.
Controversial subjects with the facts can be tense, but we are Ace Up Science here to make things make sense.
Today we are talking about universal basic income. In light of all this AI chat, ChatGPT coming for our jobs, is a universal basic income the right idea for the future? We're also going to be talking about brushing our teeth and the idea of something being on the tip of your tongue.
The lips, the teeth, the tip of the tongue, the lips, the teeth, the tongue. Okay, someone's not
is
a
that,
theater kid.
Is that Sweeney Todd?
It's called a vocal warm-up. Biatch.
Wait. Oh, I know this one. Brrr, no.
Brrr, okay, you know, that's High School Musical.
Yeah, that is High School Musical's infamous.
Here's another one. What I want is a proper cup of coffee made in a proper copper coffee pot. Do you know this one? Maybe off my rut, but I want a proper coffee and a proper copper pot. Tin coffee pots and iron coffee pots, they're no use to me. If I can't have a proper cup of coffee and a proper copper coffee pot, I'll have a cup of tea.
Okay, so theater kids are constantly made fun of, and sometimes it's just hard to be on their side. Like, watching you do that, it's like, yeah, like, you can't observe a bunch of kids being like, hey, I'm hopping in a cup of coffee pot, and not be like, oh, losers, I'm kidding.
Whatever, you know what, sometimes it's good to just like something, even if other people don't like you for it.
Yeah, I know. I am officially a bully.
It's so hot, and I'm trying not to complain. It's so hot, but I have sunscreen all in my eyes.
Yeah, you're kind of Goldilocks boy.
What is that? Oh,
you're
kind of
you're
just learning that?
No, it's just like crazy because you're always like complaining about the cold. And then it's like the heat comes and my white ass is like supposed to be the one who can't handle it. I'm so happy.
I can handle it better than you. I just complain more.
Okay, but then it's hard to tell what that means if you can handle it because if you're complaining.
True.
You know what I mean? I did go to the beach yesterday, and my new thing, I have a canoe. I canoe to Hanlands. It's gorgeous, gorgeous. But I did, you know, for the sake of the summer tan, let's go back to listen to our episode on sunscreen. Mm-hmm. I put on sunscreen, but I canoed to the island 1 hour in the 1 p.m. 31-degree Toronto sunlight, and I burnt my back to all absolute hell. I looked like the Canadian flag. The sunscreen could not keep away the sun.
You gotta reapply.
No, I gotta wear a shirt.
Oh, that too.
That's like this was like one of those moments, and my friend and I were both like, okay, we learned from our mistake. And then we got there, flipped the canoe over a fence, and hid under the canoe at the beach. But it was amazing. I love Toronto so much. I'm in such a good mood.
I do love the heat. I'm just tired. That's all. I'm sorry. I biked here and then I went to the gym and it was really hot and I just like low on water, low on energy. So
drink some Wawa.
I drink a lot.
So okay, well, because like, let's go, people.
Preemptively apologizing. I'll try and keep the energy up, but I guess I mean like, sorry if I'm Eeyore today.
Okay.
No, I did sing my proper cup of coffee pretty chipper. So
yeah,
knows?
No, I know, I know. I'm like, you could have just lied to them all and kept going.
No, because I want this pod to be honest, you know, earnest and real.
Oh, I so don't.
I know, you know,
like it, like everyone listening, just know right now that like when I turn this off, I'm like, Mitch, I'm exhausted. Kidding, I'm in such a good mood. Okay, so binaries are real.
Oh, what did we learn this week?
So mine was about the concept of something being on the tip of your tongue.
Yeah, hence the lips, the teeth, the tip of the tongue.
Oh, okay. So they did a study and found out that they think that idea is false because they studied people who were going through that experience and people
when
who
you're like,
okay, I know it. And then the way they asked them was like, what's the first letter of the word? Because that's kind of how people start to be like,
yeah.
Oh,
or like, what does it sound like?
Yeah,
or,
yeah. And then someone usually says the answer and they're like, oh, I was this close.
Yeah.
And they found that when they asked people the first letter of the word, whether they were having the tip of the tongue experience or not, it was like the same amount of probability of them getting the right first letter. Right.
Like that letter didn't help? Or?
It didn't help. They weren't more accurate than someone who was just asked to kind of like guess a letter.
Huh.
And who wasn't going through the experience of being like, ooh, I know. Oh, don't tell me. And then they think what's happening is that you're recognizing the question.
Not the answer.
So like someone's bringing something up that's like a concept that you've maybe thought about, heard about, read about, but it doesn't mean you actually like know the answer, but you know sort of like the question.
Well, that reminds me of two things. Like, because once, or I've heard, like, there's different styles of memory, and I don't have this in front of me right now. I'm not an expert on the subject, but it's like the reason that it's much harder to recall something, but if you're given a piece of information, it's so much easier to go off and remember that you knew it. Does this make sense?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Like, when
you're
when someone says, like, name an element from the periodic table, you might freeze and have a hard time recalling one. But if I say
a word...
they'll
be like, lithium. And you'll be like, well, lithium actually is
mine.
Yeah,
or if I say a random word, you'll be able to more likely know that is an element or that's not.
Oh, okay.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
versus,
yeah.
Like, recalling them. So I sometimes it does feel like when something feels it's on the tip of my tongue, it's not that the actual word is. It's that I know I have heard it before and I do know it and that there's something there.
But what they're saying is that maybe you've, like... heard the question.
Yeah.
Or
like
the
there's
idea.
Just a familiarity of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It reminds me of kind of the science on deja vu. It reminds me of that feeling.
Yeah.
A lot.
Yeah. It they
but how
about
it's kind
vu.
Of like there's all these subconscious little cues and it's your environment and it's like this emotional attachment, but not necessarily that you actually knew the answer. Or
yeah. They actually fully half the article was about deja vu.
Oh, really? Okay.
So it is linked.
Because it
yeah.
reminds me of that feeling where
see,
you're
chipper. You're on it. Don't doubt yourself. Go write an article about
it's all
deja
an
vu.
Act.
Life's an act, though, if you really think about it. That's why every theater kid's the tip of the tongue and the tom of the tip of the tongue. Okay, what did you learn about?
Mine's going to rock your world.
Oh, God.
Okay. Did you know that
no.
brushing what? Your teeth
yeah.
does not prevent cavities?
Brushing your teeth does not. Prevent no what
okay so like there is a bunch of science and research that has gone into both brushing your teeth
so why are we doing it
okay so I will talk to you about it so basically there's been studies that follow different groups of kids they give half of the kids they stick them with a dental hygienist to help them brush their teeth every day versus ones who just like are kids who do whatever and many other studies have they all find like brushing the act of brushing your teeth doesn't prevent cavities the like twist here is that fluoride does. So fluoride is preventative.
Wait. And that's in toothpaste?
In toothpaste.
Okay.
Most, but like some toothpaste don't have fluoride. Most do. Like you can buy probably fluoride-free toothpaste.
Yeah, if you go to Whole Foods and spend more on
the
like...
But it's the misconception that the act of brushing actually does not prevent cavities because they've tested fluoride mouthwash and fluoride, what do you call it, like... varnish, like when the dentist puts that varnish on your teeth, that's fluoride, and you have to like wait or whatever. Those are just as effective as brushing. Like washing, like rinsing your mouth with fluoride mouthwash would be just as effective as brushing.
So, but brushing your teeth, doesn't it do something good? Maybe not just cavities?
Yes. Okay. So that's the other twist is that there is some evidence that it is helps your gums stay healthy, like against gingivitis.
And yeah, you're getting rid of plaque.
But that, I think, is the myth, because like fluoride is what's helping to manage your actual teeth not decaying and like have bacteria. But I think that your gums can get inflamed.
Wow.
Gingivitis, right? Like from bacteria and stuff.
This would be a really fun thing to like tell to your like dentist and stuff.
Yeah. No, I think they probably know that distinction, right? Like it's not saying, it was just like, it doesn't, a lot of people think it prevents cavities, but it's the fluoride that's doing that.
Wow.
Because fluoride helps to like rebuild and recalcify your teeth, right?
Also, never had a cavity.
Really?
Have you?
Yeah. A couple when I was a kid. Yeah, but they're like the clear kinds, so you can't. I don't have, like,
I've never heard you admit such a thing.
Oh.
I feel like I've asked you before.
I'm not
before.
Ashamed of it.
You are a liar on this podcast.
I'm telling the truth. Right?
Wait, you've had a cavity? Mitchell Ryan Moffitt. I didn't know that.
I have a propensity for, like, I have to brush my teeth really. That's why I floss so much. Because,
wait, so what? When did you
have
that?
Because when I've gone to the dentist, even as an adult, they are sometimes like, are you a smoker or do you drink a lot of pop? Because I get a lot of plaque in my teeth, like in my back of like my friends. So I have to, that's why I'm like, I need to brush my teeth really well. That's why it made such a huge difference when I switched to an electric toothbrush. So I think there's a genetic component.
And you're getting fluoride, my friend, in your toothpaste. That's for sure.
Oh, for sure. I don't have like major teeth problems. My cavities were probably when I was like early teens or something.
So did they fill you? Did they fill
Excuse
them?
Excuse me.
Did they fill them?
Yeah, I mean, like, what else would they have
No, done? Like, because you said they were, like, some special cavity.
Oh,
like,
no, they used to only be silver, but mine are clear, so I don't remember which teeth it's on.
Oh, my God.
Whereas people who have, like, it olden days would get the silver ones. You can see which teeth they had cavities in. Also, I don't think mine were that deep, but I remember I had to have, like, that big dental dam thing in my mouth. My mouth was, like,
dental
stretched
dam,
open while they did it, and it was, like, an awful experience. And then I was, like, I will take care of my teeth forever from now on.
But don't you think, I thought your answer to all of this was going to be diet and sugar related.
Well, that makes a big difference for sure.
Sorry, because like that's what I thought you were going to say. I didn't even think you were going to say it's fluoride. You're going to be like, the only thing that matters is like sugar intake.
Oh,
but
I
that's
mean,
not, that's just part of it.
That was not what this study was talking about or the studies were addressing, but definitely our modern day diets play a big role in the propensity for cavities. Like processed sugar allows bacteria to thrive, which allows them to like break down your teeth enamel and cause cavities.
It's
sure.
When I love my granola parents never allowing me to have any sugar.
Any sugar.
Because I've known, like, I do genuinely think that. I just remember in school there was always this like anxiety about going to the dentist and everyone being like, I have cavities. And me just kind of being like, I don't. Like, and I just like, I always kind of
felt. Well, you could just have good genetics too. I mean, not to say your family is
very
healthy.
Like, we were never allowed pop. When my parents made Kool-Aid, they'd make me read the instructions and be like, 4 cups of sugar? Yeah, right. We're doing half a cup. And we'd have like sour water Kool-Aid. Like, although one time my parents did say like, okay, Greg, I think we've actually talked about this on the podcast. Like, put in the sugar that you think is valid. Or sorry, put in the sugar that it says on the thing. And like they watched me like with the scoop. I was like,
it's
one,
so
two.
Much.
And I'm like, do it as I'm doing it. They're like, yeah, one more. And I was like, it's almost like the like Matilda like cake boy thing. I was like,
it's
ew. You're like pouring it in. You're like, I don't even understand.
Especially for Kool-Aid. You're like, wait, what was actually in the package other than food coloring?
Food coloring. Exactly. You're like, and then 4 cups of sugar. It is wild. So like anyways. But yeah.
Teeth. Yeah. So now you know. I mean, brushing really your teeth is very important, but toothpaste with fluoride is what makes the cavity difference.
Yeah. Slay all day.
Okay. Break time and come back for, what are we talking about?
It's a big
universal
one.
Basic income, which could relate back to taking care of your teeth, to be honest.
How?
For people who don't like have that, it's not even covered in Canada either.
Oh,
you know?
Wow.
Teeth
like
is really
so
expensive.
Yeah.
All teeth care is expensive unless your insurance covers it.
Okay, true.
So could be really important. Okay, we'll be back.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Study time.
So universal basic income is a social welfare proposal in which all citizens of a given population regularly receive a guaranteed income in the form of an unconditional transfer payment independent of any other salary.
Right. So you, whether you work or not, there's like a payment that you would get to supplement whatever else you're making, right?
Yes. And the conversation is happening now around AI, ChatGPT. ChatGPT and this concept that like a lot of now like white collar workers are going to be in trouble with like this new AI stuff.
Yeah, it is kind of ironic that people like care more now because like the conversation has been for a long time.
Like a copywriter will
take over blue collar workers because it's going to like automate a lot of like factory jobs and truck driving jobs. And now like there is and has been concern about that. But now that it's like gone into like the creative field and you're seeing like script writing and like art and stuff be done by AI a lot, it's like, oh my God. And like CEO is being like, this could do my job. Okay, we need to like seriously think about this now.
Yeah, that is frustrating.
Which is like, yeah, annoying and ironic.
But it is a, like today we're going to talk about the studies around, you know, why it works. Why it works is like an interesting philosophical question because this is about like livelihoods and stuff.
I think it's fair to say, does it work?
Does it work? But it's also so understudied is the other thing. Yeah.
Yeah. I think the biggest caveat up front is that we're seeing a handful of pilots around the world, different versions of what could be called universal basic income, but to most people's satisfaction are probably not all encompassing, right? Because one of the biggest factors of universal basic income is that you will receive this for the rest of your life. Yeah. And that can change the way you behave versus like, we're running a test for the next 6 months or for the next 5 years where maybe we'll give you a cash a monthly or something like that. Like that can change how people behave. And so there is some evidence we'll go through today. And I've chosen to do mine by like one specific study and then one review study of like 16 other trials. Cool. But the biggest challenge I think is that A, they're all different. Many of them have discrepancies between them and varied differences. And that's okay for them individually, but it's difficult to like grab a bigger picture for the sort of gold standard universal basic income idea.
Yeah. And welfare, as we know it, like the current concept of like a welfare state apparently emerged out of like after World War II. When like America and Europe and the Commonwealth countries tried to rebuild their economies and actively tried to provide for the well-being of poorer citizens through grants, services, and money, but for like housing and food, but they require intense like bureaucracy and qualification standards for who receives it. Mm-hmm. So that isn't universal basic income because universal basic income would be going to everyone in theory, although some of the studies I found it was still sort of like earmarked to the poorer people, but there was no like justification. There was no bureaucracy. It was just like them finding out how much you made and then just like sent it to the money.
And I mean, I'm sure there's different theories or proposals around universal basic income. Like, could it be proportional to your income? Right.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
If you are a wealthy person, maybe you don't like if of course, then you lose your job or whatever. Like there could probably be very many permutations of a form of universal basic income. So I don't know, like on the surface before you did research, like what was your take
before research?
I'm like
slay all day, like I want universal basic income for the universe, give it to the aliens. Like but I'm not an economist. Mm-hmm. And I have like I have a very like what is it, it's like I just think about the amount of money that, I guess it's like thinking about the amount of money that rich people have is like actually what my brain goes. I just like think about like Toronto. Like I'm thinking about like where we live, Canada, Toronto, these like insanely affluent countries and cities with insanely privileged resources, like all these things. I just think like there is enough money for everyone to get, you know, mm-hmm. like, but then again, it's like someone who actually understands might be like, you're insane. But I just think that there is. And I really like, you know, I bike around the city all the time and I'm like, okay, well, there's endless amounts of absolute giant houses all over the city. I'm like, tax the hell out of these people. These like,
yeah,
tax the hell out of us. And I we do get taxed a lot not, as rich people. But
yeah,
like,
yeah. But not only in Toronto and not only in Canada, like we're seeing crazier and wider wealth gaps, right? And I think like more and more people just like struggle to make ends meet, to pay for food, to pay for rent. And that's when it's just like, that is actually fucked up. Like if that's the state we're in, not only should we be taxing rich people, because it is like, okay, fine. There might be an economic argument that this is a very complicated subject. We don't know the full ramifications of what happens if everyone gets it.
Could fine. It be
like
bad?
That's
yeah.
all fair. But we're also currently existing in a state that is bad. That many people are starving and many people are like sacrificing their own well-being for their kids and sacrificing or don't even have the choice and like struggling mentally, struggling physically while other people have way more than they need.
Yeah.
And so to me, that's where like universal basic income comes in, even outside of the AI conversation, because it's like something has gone wrong. And if we're not coming up with a clean enough solution and like aren't able to just like tax the rich and redistribute some of this wealth, which I think would have to be part of universal basic income anyway. Like people always are going to be like, where's the money coming from?
Yeah.
To me, it's just like people who care about this and want this to work, it seems like so much more compassionate, you know?
Well, like and it, also like, yeah, I just don't really like, the one thing that comes to my head is that we, you know, we spent a lot of time living in Medellin, Colombia, these countries where the wealth disparity is even like, it's so drastic. Mm-hmm. It's worse than like Canada or Toronto, or we might think that we're going through a crisis in Toronto, but when you live in other places, you're like, oh my God, there mm-hmm. is actually like a socialist infrastructure here that is keeping people to have a really high standard quality of life, regardless of
where we live. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Like, even if you're an unhoused person, you can like just go into any hospital and get really great care and things like that. Where I'm like, if we allow the wealth inequality to get worse in Canada, everyone's life will get worse. Mm. Because I've lived in other countries where it's like that. And then like, that's when things become more dangerous. That's when.
Yeah. More isolating.
More like
then rich people feel unsafe or feel that they're like separate from, and like, don't, it's harder to want to be or like have nice spaces where everyone can enjoy it and feel safe and protected and clean and all these things that we like love about where we live in Toronto.
There was something interesting. This is just an anecdote that someone told us when we were in Chile, and they said that there's all these rich people in Chile who want to like live in Canada because they're so frustrated that they can't own like an Audi because they're so rich. And if you own an Audi in like Santiago, there's a really high likelihood of getting like carjacked or get robbed. So they're so frustrated by the way Santiago is, they want to come to Toronto so that they can like live a life and like live their luxuries. And she was like, her point was like, why don't they want to distribute their wealth? Mm-hmm. And because usually in these poorer countries, the conservative people are actually the richer ones. Whereas in our political system, we've noticed that a lot of affluent city dwellers like Toronto are actually more liberal, which is an interesting thing. She's like, why wouldn't these people want to distribute their wealth so they could create a
society? It was not just richer. It didn't have to do with affluence, but we thought it was something like the major cities in like North America, at least, are much more progressive and pushing for policies like that are progressive. Whereas there, she thought like the cities were voting more conservative than the rural.
Because she said they're more wealthy. They're wanting to hold on to their money.
I see. Okay.
That was her point, was like, if these rich people were able to distribute their money in the society of, say, Santiago, then everyone can live, potentially the light, even richer people's lives will be better for them to have like an Audi, which is an insane thought. But
yeah, I don't know. Like, I know it's complicated, but it's just weird when someone can't objectively say, like, I want other people's lives to be good too.
Okay, so I think we should talk about universal basic income now. Okay. But the thing I want to end on is the new psychological studies of what it means to be a conservative versus a liberal. And it's about these ideological states, which I think will be interesting.
Okay.
So let's keep going, because I feel like we're almost going into that territory.
I mean, I have some studies. Like, what do you want to do?
The only thing I'll say is that the first time it was ever proposed as an idea, universal basic income, was in 1516 in a novel by Thomas More called Utopia. So that was the first time that, like, in history, it was ever brought up. Mm. And then it was only in the 60s and 70s that economists started to go back referencing that novel. Like, wait a second, this could be a really good economic idea. And in the 70s, it was like really taking off. But then a big conservative movement of the 80s came in and like abolished a lot of the universal basic income like policies that were starting. So it kind of does have like an interesting history.
That is interesting. Like, this is kind of a random related thing. When I was listening to like an Alan Watts podcast, they were talking about how in the 60s and 70s there was all these like social progressive ideas around like spirituality and psychology that went away in the 80s and then kind of came back in the 90s.
Yeah, it's Ronald like Reagan
people,
vibes.
People didn't like were like super into like connecting with the universe and nature and
mushrooms
then, like, in the 80s it went away.
Yeah,
I'm like, what did happen in the 80s?
No, well, that's like a big, that's like the war on drugs. It's like it's very much the like you know, there are like people, pie in the sky people who genuinely think that mushrooms and LSD were abolished by the state so that people wouldn't be anti-capitalist. Because it is. Like, literally, I did mushrooms like the other day, and it makes you be like, money's dumb. Like, material possessions are dumb, and like the trees and birds are all that matters. Mm-hmm. And like, that was scary.
And that was like
for,
a threat.
But that's like maybe a little like.
Right. There's no like studies on it.
Yeah.
But it was just.
But
like
it's
a,
like,
a,
I certainly believe
theory.
That.
Okay. Okay, I'm gonna just bring up one of my specific study that was done in California. These results came out in 2021. I think the study is ongoing, so like more results may come out. But it's a place called Stockton, California, where they gave 125 people living in neighborhoods that were below the median household income $500 a month unconditionally. So like no strings attached. Again, this is like people might argue, does this count as universal basic income? Because like, it was from Feb 2019 to Feb 2020.
Yeah,
so that's only
that's
a year.
Very short.
But like this study is going longer, but the results I'm going to read are from that time period.
Okay, cool.
And they're basically just tracking like the differences. But again, it's like, oh, that reminded me one thing. It's like every country may have a difference because a country like Canada has a really strong social security network.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like there's a difference when you give somebody in Canada $500 than maybe in America because they don't have health care. So even if you are under like the poverty line in Canada, you may still have more social support that then you can use that money differently than somebody in a totally different country.
Yeah.
Anyway, so this is America. The things they noticed, full-time employment rose by 12%, but to those who were given this money. Financial, physical, and emotional health improved. It reduced because it reduced their income fluctuations. It generated more time for their relationships. So food security for members of one whole household like alleviates the strain on people who they normally rely on. It helped women in particular, who they said typically bear the brunt of most unpaid care work. So a lot of like women don't attend to their own needs because they're caretakers for others. And so as a result, they might not like buy themselves like their own pads or sanitary like requirements because they're like spending their money on their kids.
Yeah, yeah.
And then when they were given this extra $500, it allowed them to like actually attend to their own needs. So I thought that was interesting. The biggest criticism that comes up against UBI is, won't it just make people lazy? Like if you just give people money, they'll just sit around and do nothing. It's like what a lot of people say. Yeah. And this study found the opposite of that.
Yeah.
So it gave people more stability and freedom to find what was right for them. Like, as I said earlier, it increased full-time employment, but because that allowed people to like have the flexibility to then like commit to something that they wanted or quit a job
like
they didn't
passion.
Like to then go work on something that they actually would care about.
Yeah.
And the money itself, then people go, well, won't they just spend it on alcohol and drugs and these things? Almost all of it went to basic needs. So food, utilities, auto costs, less than 1% went toward alcohol and tobacco.
Oh my God.
Again, the limitation is that they said because this is short term, people are unlikely to quit the workforce. So it's like not, you know what I mean? If they knew they were having it forever, maybe the results would be different.
There's not any universal basic income proper like studies, period, because they are supposed to be so long and they always get cut.
Mm-hmm.
But that's really interesting.
Yeah. And I think those results have seen themselves repeated in different varieties throughout the world. Like there is a few other countries and cities and like small focus groups where they've tried. And this is generally what they see, like general well-being increases. People don't just sit around being lazy and they're happier.
Yeah. So in the 70s in Manitoba, it was called the Manitoba Basic Annual Income Experiment. So this is an example of one of the experiments in the 70s that was like gone away because of like the conservative sweep that happened in Canada. But it was like a prairie town called Dauphin received monthly checks to spend however they liked. But they, again, only did low-income families, mm-hmm. which is not universal basic income the way that, like,
right.
I think it should be. Like, everyone should get it because I think politically it'll be so hard. It'll just be easier.
Right.
But
people get upset if other people get things that they don't.
Yeah, more on that later with conservative ideology. But they found mental health improved. Teenagers spent an extra year in school. Like, the amount of kids in school rose, which I never thought about. Like, mm-hmm. apparently when you're poor, kids leave school to work.
To help with family, right?
Yeah, it's like, okay, obviously help you shouldn't income. Want that for your society.
Yeah.
And hospitalizations declined by 8.5%. That was due to accidents, which is so interesting. And mental health issues decreasing. But I was like, accidents. They were like, that's really weird. Also, this is funny because like this is all this data that like was put away. And then this researcher recently went and found it all and went through it all. And then they said, importantly for economists, again, this was longer than the last one, but no, there was no increase in people quitting their jobs. Mm. Yeah. The employment rate stayed the same throughout the trial. And then also they've done a similar thing in Namibia where they were provided $7 per month, which is just like showing you like in other countries, it's like way cheaper what mm-hmm. would be needed. To 1,000 people in one specific village and increased school attendance by 92%. Malnutrition dropped by 42%.
Like that's insane.
Or sorry, malnutrition dropped from 42% to 10%.
Oh, wow. But like... That's wild when you're like, that is such a clear demonstration of the benefit to a community. You know what I mean? And I get, like, I know there's probably criticism out there and people saying, but it's just like at the end of the day, isn't the whole job of like our society to like uplift everyone? And don't you realize like people will be like, oh, LA's awful because there's like so much homelessness and this wealth disparity. It's like, yeah, we need to like, you need to put resources into that. People point blame at individuals when like a system has completely failed them. And I think this goes to show that it's like, yes, maybe a small fraction of a percent would love to just exploit the government and find the loopholes and make money and sit around doing nothing. But your average person wants to live a fulfilled life.
Yeah.
Even if that means just like providing for their family and hanging out with their friends and having meaningful connections.
And this universal basic income to start, if I were to be like politician vibes in Canada, Ontario, or as small as Toronto would be low enough mm-hmm. that it's just like icing. It would be like the tiniest sprinkle if you're a rich person and you get it.
Yeah.
But it would be like, you know, a pretty big cake for someone. But it's not something that someone could just like live off of.
Yeah.
It's meant to give people like this, the economic freedom to get out of like...
To know, to have guaranteed
the
income.
The trap of just, poverty. Yeah.
And
poverty, I said, that's so weird.
I mean, something I was thinking about was, and obviously, like, we are not poor. We're quite affluent.
No, we're so, rich.
Yeah, sorry. I just mean, like, what I'm trying to say is, like, I don't have a good perspective on this. And I'm curious, where was I going with this? Like, what happens when people get used to a certain amount of money, right? Like, because I think about, like, obviously, we used to not make a lot of money, and now we make a lot of money. I'm not talking about, like, people who... are scraping by to like make ends meet, but in the long run of a UBI system, does it all just kind of like pan out as like, okay, everyone becomes used to this and then their spending increases? I'm sure there's studies on that, but I'd be
curious. No, there
isn't.
That's the thing. I was reading about how studies are like, we can't just, they're like, all this information's coming in that it's great mm-hmm. and pretty much all good, but they're like, but we can't say that because these aren't real studies. They're flawed. No one knows what would happen. Literally, no one knows what would happen.
There's no real... I guess based on this data, at least from the... like even the bigger review I'm going to talk about, it's like most people spend that money on basic necessities. So it's like, why are we even going to worry about if it becomes... like, if that's what people need to spend the money on, that goes to show you how much they need it.
Yeah.
And I think like, fine, maybe in 10 years, if we're like, well, we're giving people so much, they're spending it on gambling and alcohol. Like, so that's a totally different problem that we just don't have right now.
Yeah. And
most
then,
people are going to take this money and use it towards living a more like healthful, peaceful life.
It's just like, honestly, such a good idea. Like even I was reading about like the concept of a city session happening in Toronto due to inflation. Like, earlier in the year, people were spending so much money in Toronto, and they've noticed it's like gone down because people can't like necessarily go out for dinner as much because they're spending so much more on groceries, all that stuff. And it's just like, your city would be invigorated with wealth by doing this.
It's more money because people would be giving into the system.
Yeah,
that helps like spur on. I mean,
That's the line where I'm not like at all into economics and don't understand. And like, you know, that's what the government tries to do often is like stimulate the economy by giving people money or tax breaks or whatever to hope that saved money or earned money goes into the system to help encourage businesses to start and people to like actively engage with spending. But like this, the whole system like of capitalism is just so crazy and so complicated. Like sometimes I just stop and I'm just like, humans are so crazy.
Yeah.
Like, and crazy is maybe a bad word. I just mean it's so complex. There's so many layers of systems within systems within systems, not just of capitalism, but like of everything is so complex. Mm-hmm. Like how we've designed it. I don't know. I was talking to our friend who works as a librarian and she was just like explaining all these different systems and conglomerate companies that like own the rights to certain publishing and try and like exploit and manage and force people to pay for. And I was just like, this is a whole world I've never even thought exists and didn't even know about. And that's just one small fraction of how humans operate with knowledge, like with texts that represent everything we've thought about and previously written down and how we're going to like own that going forward. Yeah. And then you think about the way we manage money and that money is just like this concept that we kind of came up with that it's like, it becomes overwhelming sometimes.
This seems simple though and seems smart. I want to hear your meta-analysis.
Well, okay. Yeah, okay. I'll talk about the meta-analysis. I'm going to try and not make this like too... Like, ultimately, so this reviewed 16 major studies, again, mostly looking at low-income communities. And these were almost all unconditional cash transfers, but not true universal basic income.
Yeah.
So, like, all of this was basically positive. I'll say a couple of the takeaways that were like negative or uncertainties after, but it was like measurable decrease in poverty. The injection of cash increased household expenditures. Again, most of it went to food. It did not significantly impact saving or household investments. So that means like it wasn't enough. Like there's not enough money that people are actually just spending it on food.
Interesting.
That they're not really able to save money, but that shows how dire it is. Yeah. People are not being able to save. So it said like it didn't have a huge impact on the labor market, meaning like there's a small increase in work participation, but overall like it didn't really affect it, which is good. Okay. Because for the ones who, for the people who did work less, it's because they were putting more time into caregiving because that frees them up to say like, okay, maybe I have a sick relative or parent or kids who need to be taken care of. Hmm. I can afford to not work now, which in my mind is a good thing.
Yeah.
Like you said, school enrollment and attendance way up in both almost all instances. Oh, improvement to health status and a myriad of health, behavioral, and social factors that are linked to leading causes of premature illness, death, disability, and then positive impacts on mental health, though they said there were some negative impacts on mental health due to the stigma and fear of these benefits. So I don't know. I didn't. Hmm. I was trying to understand it more deeply, and I didn't know if that meant like, when you received the universal basic income, maybe some people felt like, am I cheating or am I being judged because I'm like getting free handouts or something like that?
Well, that is interesting.
Yeah. And there is a perception, and maybe we'll talk about it a little more with like how people look down on people who are in harder situations than them.
Yeah.
No, and it's think real. That they're just like cheating or taking advantage of a system. And so maybe some people felt the weight of that. Like, oh, I'm taking advantage of the system.
That is so interesting.
Yeah. Let me see. So the takeaways, there's no gold standard UBI, and that's been the challenge. Like everyone's like, we need to do an actual trial run of this somewhere.
I'm like, do it in Canada.
So we can find out. Does it work?
If there's one country, it should be like Canada, Sweden, like these affluent up their ass small population countries, like just do it.
Yeah, there was another study I came across that was just so like annoying. Showing the amount of money even in Canada, because I think it was to do with dental, maybe because Canada is one of the only places that has universal healthcare but doesn't cover dental, or maybe there was like some prescription drug element of this, and they were like, when they calculated, they could actually save $4 billion in healthcare costs. It wasn't UBI, but it was by subsidizing like this category of health expenditures for people. And that kind of comes back over and over. You always see like when you invest upfront in the health of your citizens and the well-being, you actually save so much money. Same with climate change. They're always like, okay, but if we invested $10 billion today, we might save $100 billion in like repairing our cities in the future.
More on that in every other side note of ASAP Science episode ever. It's just like, oh my God, like we're not built as humans to do that.
So some of the trade-offs that are unsure, it's what is largely unaddressed is like, where does the money come from and how does that impact the overall system and program? So like, for example, if you're taking tax money from another program to put into UBI, does that, you know, because the money has to come from somewhere, like, is it overall impacting the system in a different way where now people have less services to something else?
Yeah.
Or can we just go like take the money from rich people and then like no one's any worse off? Only a very small body of these studies examine like what's the actual mechanism of these things that's happening. Like, we see these good results, we know what's happening, like people feel better, they're working, they're happier.
Yeah, that's so hard
like,
to know.
The mechanism is not clear. Like, is it because they have stronger community connections, because they have better food now, or because they're able to invest it into like their household? Like, so no one that knows. Would yeah, be useful to know, because then it's like maybe we can plan around that to like put money in those specific categories to actually help.
But again, you need to do more research to know.
Yeah. And then it says there has been limited research on the impact of UBI type programs at the community level, as in it's rare for a whole community to be given money.
Yeah, so I know. They still haven't done everyone. They've only ever
like the results are so isolated and individualistic.
Yeah.
As opposed to like actually like all of Canada does this now, and we can know as a country the country's like performing so much better or something like that. Which is like a huge lofty goal. But hopefully that wasn't too boring to sit through. I just being like overall very positive, but very like premature. It's super early. We need like bigger versions of this that are farther reaching, but all the preliminary research feels very positive.
Yeah. And it's like, I wonder how much.
How much what?
I'm just like thinking if I was Prime Minister of Canada, if I would just be like, everyone gets, well, I'd literally just be like $60 a month. Like, I would just start there.
Can it just be something
like small? Low enough that it's like, we'll just take it from the goddamn dirty oil.
Then maybe
oil.
People would just be like,
but I don't know. I think people might
just to have like an extra check.
But okay, so now I'm going to talk about conservatives versus liberals and like this new psychological study, which I thought was really interesting. It was like a huge study, and it was about how worldviews of a conservative versus a liberal person have like, they think now there's like a new way of classifying people.
Okay.
So in politics, conservatism means a tendency to resist change and tolerate social inequality. So it's like,
that's like part of the definition of a conservative.
Yes. So it's like, we're now yelling about social equality.
Yeah.
Like, you know, we aren't a conservative podcast. So like, it would be so awesome to have someone here who was a conservative. Cause it's kind of like, I want to know what those talking points are, because I'm having a hard time even grappling. Cause I'm liberal. Like,
why
which means,
do you think it's okay for other people to have less?
Yeah. So, well, liberalism means to embrace change and to reject inequality from a political standpoint. So then psychologists, this is like a sort of like, this is like if you're in academia and you're studying whatever, they would maybe say that those were definitions. Then psychologists looked further and found that conservatives think that the world in general is more dangerous. And therefore, this leads to the concepts of like gun ownership and border enforcement and increased military spending. Like, you're like, oh, okay.
More scared.
Whereas liberals think that the world is safe and have and think that the world is not as dangerous of a place. I'm like, okay, that's interesting. Because I also am like, so like the world is like, I like love the world. Mm-hmm. And I think it's like an amazing place. Even like between you and I, I'm always like, come rob our house. I leave the door open. Like, I don't think the worst.
Please
in
don't
things.
Rob our house.
Yeah. Okay. So those were sort of like the dated ones. The new study says, and it's kind of like complicated, but it's, they think that we need to add into conservatives versus liberals the concept of whether the world is hierarchical.
Mm-hmm.
And it's called a primal world belief. And so it's kind of weird because they use the word hierarchical, which to me means like kings versus like,
yeah, well, that there's
peasants.
Like there's like a pecking order or a ladder in which people sit in society.
But what they actually kind of mean in their example was that picturing between belief systems, there's either a strong line or like a dotted line. And conservatives think of the world as a strong line between things. For example, like the world is either dangerous or it's safe.
Hmm.
It's like either dull or enticing. Like they like black or white kind of things, whereas liberals are more open to the concept that things are like complicated and there's not a straight line between anything. So their idea was that like conservatives think, for example, when it comes to like LGBTQ issues, like that gender matters. Like whether you're a girl or a boy, to them, it matters. Mm-hmm. Whereas like a liberal person would be more like, there is a dotted line between a girl and a guy. It's all a lot more flowy. It doesn't even matter kind mm-hmm. of vibe. Like conservatives think that like if you're rich or if you're poor, that matters. Like there's a reason why. Mm-hmm. Like they have these like strong ideas that like there's talent, there's ethics, there's like value to people who are rich. Mm. And there's talent that's lacking and things are lacking to people who are poor. And I'm like, that is what the UBI thing we're talking about. They're like, you are poor because you are lazy.
Right.
And I don't believe that. Like, we are liberal. We're like, no, it's so much more complicated than that. There's like such things as the poverty trap. Like mm-hmm. people who are poor are working harder than rich people. We're around rich people. We know that to be true. Like,
and just like generational wealth. Like you yes, grow yeah. where you're born and what family you're born into provides you so much.
Yeah, but it's interesting because if you think about like a conservative person, not like us who are like, we are wealthy, but say you're a conservative person who is poor, you might have a worldview that's like, I want my kid to be talented because that matters and they will get rich and they will succeed in society. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's not like, I don't know. I'm just like, I sometimes think I paint conservatives as these like rich, evil people, but like,
no, there's lots of poor conservative people.
That's what I mean. So I'm like, that is interesting. They might be like UBI is bad because I do actually fundamentally believe that if you can, you will get out of poverty based on your talent. And I was just like, it's, I don't know. It was just like an interesting addition.
Yeah.
And it is also just important for us to remember that we like are so like quote unquote politically liberal. And we always talk about these things. And it's like, well, it's just so obvious to me that I'm that, not the other thing.
Yeah.
And then another example of liberal versus conservative is like the abortion debate, like a strong line. They're like, life starts at conception. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like liberal people are more willing to be like, it's way more complicated than that. Like, I thought it was like a cool new way of looking at things.
Yeah.
And I do notice when I'm talking to conservative people, there is a lot of intense, like, this is the way things are.
Right or wrong, kind of.
Yeah, which I think is about control. It's about, like, feeling safe.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it's just like...
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think UBI is linked to that. Because you have to sort of
definitely is. I think when it comes to wealth, you're right. Like, people who tend to be more conservative believe that wealth comes from purely hard work. And, like, you can work your way out of anything.
Yeah, which but like, I so don't
think. And yeah, I just think the progressive view is able to like, I'm not saying it's perfect, but it's able to self-evaluate a little more and say, you know what, I did have a lot of support around me. I did come from a country that was affluent and able to provide me free education. And so I was allowed to be educated. I did come from a family that comparatively was wealthy and able to, you
know
what I mean?
To drop out of school.
Yeah, I never had to think about X, Y, and Z. It's always interesting to me when people are like low income or poverty and conservative. And I think that's like, I'm not really sure where that comes from. And like, if it's, you know, because sometimes, especially in America, I feel like you see people like advocating against their own interests.
Yeah. And
people often say like, that's because they believe one day they will be rich. Like there's this kind of narrative that like some people fight against their own interests for not taxing the rich because they think they'll be rich one day.
And the American dream is like what a lot of people are sold on, which is that the American dream is that,
but
you
it's
come
still
here, you
challenging
work hard,
for me to understand why like so many people simp for rich people. Like why wouldn't anyone under X amount of money go like, yeah, we should tax billionaires a lot more. What there are a lot of people who don't make a lot of money who'd be like, no, that's not fair. They worked so hard for that money. Why should it be taken from them?
I think that goes back to your idea.
It is like they believe that you make money proportionate to your effort.
Okay, yeah. So then that's what they're thinking. They're like, that person is an absolute genius who invented this thing.
Yeah.
And was so hardworking in school. And therefore, they deserve that. And I like to live in a world where I know I could do that.
Yeah,
maybe is part of it.
I will get what I deserve.
Whereas I'm like, that person got lucky and is a spoiled Elon, is Elon Musk, and his parents are like own a
and
mine
even,
and like
even if like of
okay,
course
I need to bring him up. That was
no, no, but there's this gray ground that needs to be covered where it's like you can be smart. I'm not talking about Elon Musk, but you can be smart and a genius and also be lucky. You know what I mean? There are many people who were probably really smart and geniuses who never got that lucky break and remained poor.
Well, okay, there's also this other thing that is like, I think related earlier to like what I was, the like mushrooms and like nature vibe, which this is just so anecdotal and truly me. And I was like definitely stoned, but I have a canoe and was, which to me, extreme privilege. I have a canoe in Toronto and like, I'm like, yeah, I have a boat, but everyone like laughs because it's like, you don't, because there's all these like yachts and stuff in Toronto that like I canoe by all the time. And we go to this beach in Toronto called Hanlon's. It's beautiful. It's queer. But there's also always a lot of yachts that like come and like they're not
there.
Queer yachts. It's
no.
like really weird. It's like all these like, it literally looks like a rap video from like Miami or like some like bougie musician's music video of like straight people on like boats. And it's like, it's just sometimes you're like, okay, that is obviously a level of wealth that's like pretty insane. Anyways. When I like will talk to friends and never like, you know, you're looking at people like, oh, I want to be on a boat. Like, oh, like I want to one day, like, I don't know, like have a boat. And I'm like, that's crazy. These people are crazy. Mm. So yesterday I was like canoeing by all these like 10 yachts to get to home. And I was kind of thinking like, I don't ever want it. Like if I'm on that boat, to me, I'm like, oh my God, this. It's like you're standing on inequality, kind of. Mm-hmm. And it kind of, to me, it doesn't feel like it's not something that I'm like that interested
that
in doing.
Yeah.
But I know lots of people who are. Like there's something about that like desire for that lifestyle that you like work hard and then you get that. And like that is what life is about.
Yeah.
Like there's something like that I see even in my like liberal friends. They're like, I want to be on that boat. And it's like... And I was just like canoeing by and this girl like jumped off, like this like hot girl. She was so hot. Jumped off and came in and she's like, would you guys kill me if we tipped your, if I tipped your canoe? And we were just like, haha.
Like yes.
We were like, haha, no, that'd be so funny. And then they were like, they were on the boat and they were like, pick her up, canoe her back to the boat, pick her up. And we were like, no, like it'll be really hard. Like
yeah,
it's
you
really
can't
tippy.
Just get in
like,
a canoe.
And then the girl just switched on the boat. She's like, and that's why you'll never be invited on a yacht. You got to play with us if you want to play with us or something. And I was
oh
like,
my God.
And it was so weird because in that moment I wanted to be like, I don't want to be on your yacht.
Yeah,
but it was like there was just like this like energy, like they're on the yacht, they're above everyone physically, they're blasting music, they're hot, and it's like that is what people want,
because people want to feel powerful literally in that moment. She wanted to feel like I mean, obviously that was defensive because she probably felt, wow, like you don't want to like engage with us, then I need to show you like verbally out loud why I'm better than you.
Yeah.
But like when people have power, they feel they have control, which is,
but that's what I'm saying. That has to be sort of part of this conversation of like, well, do you know what I mean? Like people who maybe aren't even wealthy or can't even afford to be on that boat. They want to be invited on and they want to work hard because one day they could be powerful enough to.
Totally. UBI maybe can stand in the face of structural inequality, and that is difficult for many people to face. I'm not saying, like, I'm sure most UBI wouldn't do that, like,
yeah
because it's not going to go far enough.
No,
but like an equal society is a threat to many people's ideas of hierarchy, because they think, well, how will I know
thinking?
I'm better than other people?
Yeah. That was literally, so that conservative thing, it's like they call it hierarchical thinking, but the way they described it was always this like straight, like sort of intense line between things. But there is something, I think.
How can you, people, like so much of our life is told to value wealth. And popularity and these things. And it's like, how can you know you're worthwhile if you don't have those things? How do you know you're a valuable person? And like, you know what I mean? If you can't externally show it, Which is like the meaning and the question of life is like, how do you find internal validation?
And it's like, that's why I'm like, many I'm people like struggle you do this. Mushrooms and you realize it's not about that. Like, that's why they're going back to that whole like Alan like Watts any, thing.
Lots of people struggle with this and not everyone expresses it through money.
And I shouldn't say you do mushrooms because it's like, you can just.
No, lots of people do mushrooms thoughts. And also don't have.
Exactly. And I'm like, I just. Thoughts. It's like,
but in general, mushrooms can provide. I've never.
An like, avenue to this, access. But. To me, it's about nature. To me, it's about like. When I saw, like, when those people were yelling at me from the yacht, I was like, I've just been looking at this gorgeous shoreline. I saw a freaking, like, Arctic tern, like, all these, like, amazing birds. Like, those are the times when I feel the most, like, powerful. Yeah. Or, like, whatever, that it's like, if I was on that yacht, I can't even see the birds. Mm-hmm. Like, or, like, whatever. There's this weird, like, line where it's like, I don't. Well, I mean, I'm sure if someone said, you want to come on my yacht, like, I might get on it.
Well, there's a difference between thinking something can just be fun. You know what I mean? Like, I think that's where this line gets gray because, like, yeah, I'm sure, like, going on a boat ride can be fun. And, like, if you don't have easy access to the beach or something, like, maybe it's fun to go swim in the water. And, like, I don't want to take that away that someone could have a meaningful experience and connect with their friends, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But there is certainly an element of when you own the yacht and you're inviting friends, a sense of, like, power and, like, importance, right, that surrounds a yacht versus, like, taking a canoe or taking a bicycle.
I know. It's so funny. Like, yesterday, this literally happened. We were on the beach.
That's why people like fancy cars.
It was so hot that, like, my friend was so smart. He was like, why don't we flip the canoe on this, like, sort of fence and so that we can all, like, huddle under, like, in the shade.
Yeah.
And we were, like, in this, like, underneath my boat. And then, like, my friend was, like, looking at me. He's like, oh, man, one day one of us has to get a boat. I was like, excuse me?
I'm like, we're under mine.
And then they all just kind of laughed. I'm like, okay, I guess this doesn't count. But it was so funny because I'm always like, guess what?
And like,
you can come on my boat. Just here's a paddle and you're going to be exhausted. But I genuinely am like, this is insane. Like, I am so affluent that I get to have a canoe. Mm-hmm. Like, the idea of like having a yacht is like, no, that's like sick.
But yeah. Anyways,
but that's just me.
Life is hard.
Yeah.
Like, to discriminate between when something becomes a toxic trait. Like, obviously, being able to take a boat onto the water can be a beautiful thing. And many people probably use it to feel connected to nature.
Yeah, especially if they're like, this is my, like, gorgeous $250,000 sailboat.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And like, they're sailing. Just have little boats who want to, like, motorboats go around. Like, probably lots of people feel connected. And like, not that I'm, like, encouraging fishing, but I think, like, some people feel connected to the nature when they're, sitting out there. Fishing.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Of course.
There's something cool and nice about being on the water, but it also gets entangled with wealth because it costs a lot of money to have that.
But no, this is like a forever conversation.
Yeah.
And I think universal basic income is like such a great idea. If I was a politician, I would do it for sure. And I think it doesn't fly in the face of like someone owning or being on a yacht. And I don't think it does. I think it actually would be a way to like lift everyone up. I do believe in it. I do want real larger scale actual studies that go on for years. There are a few that are going on right now in the midst of them. And this is just about my political race for mayor of Toronto in 2045.
Isn't it a famous phrase? A rising tide
floats all yachts.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, literally.
Like, it's much nicer to live in a place where everyone can be happy and survive. And, like, we're never going to get rid of inequality. It's not going to make people all the same. But it's just much nicer to know that people aren't struggling for basic necessities.
And it's just, like, Toronto, like, good God. It is such a beautiful city. Like, truly, canoeing back at sunset, I was like, this city is world class. It's freaking amazing. It's like, I could cry. I love it so much. There is so much sick wealth. It's like the endless...
Sick in a bad way.
Yeah. The endless affluent house. Like, we need to tax the fuck out of the rich. And it really isn't that complicated. Like, in Toronto. So I'm talking about Toronto. I'm like, I've lived here my whole life. I have seen the way things are. I know how much money rich people have. And it's like their fear of losing it is absolutely sick in the head. Like, we all the rich people, of which there are so many in this city, need to be taken down a notch, like, for their own mental health in order to, like, truly, like, lift up. Like, it's not complicated to me at all. Like,
I don't think so either.
Deeply, like, I think it is the right thing to do, but someone has to do it. Everyone vote for Olivia Chow. Okay.
I think UBI will become a necessity at some point.
Yeah.
Like, we can end on this, but
that's
it's
the
just
ChatGPT
like,
thing.
Yeah. There's going to be a point where enough humans are put out that it becomes a boiling, like that tipping point where it's like, without this, our society collapses into chaos.
But we need these studies now then, because people can't, we need the, they're not going to be able to
take so long
with it when
to
they need
activate
it.
Something like this. Like, we need, why do we want to go to crisis point before we're willing to do
that? And that's
something
too late. When you go to crisis point is when everyone's lost their minds, and like that literally like
change.
The rich people made borders around their house or they flew to New Zealand and whatever. Truly, Canada, Toronto, now is the time. Okay. Let's do this, man.
Let's get UBI.
We are going to be getting UBI in Toronto. I just opened a photo of us in Mexico on a freaking yacht. Okay,
oh,
we're canceled.
That's why deep down I was like, but it's okay to be on a yacht sometimes.
What was that? It was like a sail. What was it? It was like the classic, like,
it was like a little excursion we did.
But there was truly like
no one we knew owned the yacht.
No, and there was 800 of the boats. Like, it was so funny. We were funneled on with all these other like tourists. It was hilarious. Yeah. And the way they did snorkeling was like from this buoy to the other, and you like got in like a line, and it was and truly I was like, they've put these fish here. Like, these are robotic fish.
Yeah.
It was anyways.
Okay.
Peace on earth.
See ya. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.